This is the Environment Report. I'm Lester Graham. Hi, how's it going? On the report today, well, you know, it's noisier now than at any other time in human history. It's almost impossible to escape the noises made by humans. So, what's all that noise doing to us? Well, we'll hear. And we've been trying to get rid of the common carp fish in ponds and lakes for close to a century now. Usually, it means poisoning everything and then restocking the lake. That's kind of overkill, so biologists are looking for a better way. And when the vet gives up on your pet, what do you do?
The vets were now basically saying you should get prepared for the fact that Poppy's not going to last much longer, and they didn't have anything else to offer.
But the Alcorns decided to keep trying. They researched holistic veterinarians.
But first, let's take a quick look at some of the news stories we've been following this week. Nature? No, thanks. I've got Xbox. That's what a recent survey is indicating. A new study commissioned by the Nature Conservancy is showing people are spending less time in nature and more time plugged in. Kyle Norris has more on that.
People in the U.S. are spending less and less time outdoors. The study says they're not visiting parks as often, and they're not going hunting or camping as often. That's because they're spending more time online, watching TV, and playing video games. Melissa Soule is with the Nature Conservancy. She says connecting with nature can change your life. That's what happened to her while she was kayaking on Lake Superior and watching the sunrise.
I've thought about life, and I thought about how small that I am and about how short of a time that we have here on this earth and how I don't want to see places destroyed. I want to see them protected.
Soule says that if people don't connect with nature, they won't care about protecting it. And that's exactly what the study says will happen. For the Environment Report, I'm Kyle Norris.
Yeah, while we're checking on recent studies, let's take a look at this one. It says climate change has made water conditions worse in the western states. The study published in the journal Science says humans are responsible for the bulk of the change, about 60% of the warming trend. Steve Zalesnik has more on that.
Over the last 50 years, the West has been warming. There's been more rain and less snow. The rivers flood earlier, the summers are drier, and the air is warmer. These changes have been documented before, but now scientists say they know why. Climatologist Tim Barnett of the University of California, San Diego, co-authored the study. Barnett says he's nearly certain humans are responsible.
So roughly the chances that we got tricked are either 1 in 100 to 1 in 1,000. And I'll take those odds to Vegas with me any day.
Barnett says water conditions will continue to get worse in the coming decades in the West. He predicts some reservoirs may run dry in the next 15 years. For the Environment Report, I'm Steve Zalesnik.
Next year, millions of televisions across the country will become obsolete. That's because the government is phasing out analog television signals. If you're on cable, it might not affect you, but for some Americans who get theirs from the terrestrial antenna, as they call it, it will likely mean tossing out one of the most toxic items in your home, that old TV set. Mark Brush has more on that.
Old televisions use what's called a cathode ray tube to project your favorite TV show into your living room. On average, these old TVs contain 4 pounds of lead. That's in addition to other toxic chemicals, such as cadmium, mercury, and arsenic. Zach Trahan is with the National Electronics Takeback Coalition. Trahan says there are many companies who claim they recycle the old TVs, but most of the time they're just sending the toxic chemicals overseas.
Some of the lead that is exported in computers and TVs to China appears to be a source of the lead being used to make children's jewelry, which is then exported back to the U.S. where it can poison American children.
Trahan's group is trying to get TV manufacturers to take back the TVs they made. So far, the only company that is taking back their old TVs is Sony. For the Environment Report, I'm Mark Brush.
Scientists are trying to outsmart a destructive bottom-feeding fish by carefully studying its life cycle. In some lakes, a fish called common carp make up more than half of the total weight of fish in the lake. They root up aquatic plants, they constantly stir up mud on the bottom, they make the water murky, and it ruins the lake for most birds and fish. The best way fisheries managers know how to control the carp has been to poison the lake, kill all the fish in it, then restock it. Peter Sorensen is a fisheries professor at the University of Minnesota.
It's not a very good long-term solution, you know. I guess it's like treating your lawn with massive doses of weed killer every year and replanting it. It's kind of crazy.
Sorensen is trying to find a better way to control the common carp so that lakes and wetlands across the country might be able to return to their natural state, which in many cases is much, much clearer. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency is taking steps to ban a pesticide used on a lot of crops, about a dozen or so. The agency says the pesticide is toxic to wildlife. Rebecca Williams reports the manufacturer might take the EPA to court.
Carbofuran kills insects that damage crops. It's used mostly on corn, alfalfa, and potatoes. The EPA wants farmers in the U.S. to stop using the pesticide. The agency says the pesticide kills wildlife, especially birds. Michael Fry is with the American Bird Conservancy.
If carbofuran is sprayed, say, on an alfalfa field, and migratory birds like ducks come in and feed on that alfalfa, it's expected that more than 90% of the birds would die if they fed on that alfalfa field within a week of the use of carbofuran in the field.
FMC Corporation makes most of the carbofuran used in the world. A manager at the company says the EPA is overstating the risks to wildlife, and FMC will fight any major restrictions placed on the chemical. For the Environment Report, I'm Rebecca Williams.
This is the Environment Report. I'm Lester Graham. Coming up, we'll hear more about that common carp, the foreign fish that makes lakes and rivers murky and hard on other wildlife. But first, we live in a world that's filled with noise. In fact, you know, I work in radio and in podcasting, and so I listen, I hear, and I make a lot of noise. But when things get too loud, the sounds can affect us in all kinds of ways. Kyle Norris talks to one man who says loud noises are a health, ethical, spiritual, and environmental issue.
For Les Blomberg, it all started with a sound like this. That's Blomberg imitating the sound of the street sweeper. It would clean his street at 4 a.m. Blomberg says he had never thought much about noise pollution until that happened, and it made him all tired and cranky. Eventually, he got the city to change when it did its street sweeping. But this experience got him interested in the topic of noise pollution.
To me, kind of at the core, noise is an issue of civility, how you treat your neighbor. It's an environmental issue. Noise is a pollutant that we're casting out. It's a waste product. It's kind of like secondhand smoke. It's the waste product of our activities that we're casting out into the environment.
Lomberg's passion for noise pollution grew as he learned more about it. And he realized it's an underrated, underappreciated problem. Now he runs the Noise Pollution Clearinghouse. It's an organization that tries to keep the peace and quiet. The organization connects people with noise experts and activists. It fights for stronger noise regulations and standards. And it tests consumer products to find out which are the quietest. Blomberg says people contact him all the time, and they usually have one of three kinds of noise problems. Jets and helicopters. Highway noises. And noises from electric amplification, like really loud car stereos. People tell him these noises ruin their sleep, their concentration, and their quality of life. And all those things put people in bad moods and can ruin how they deal with other people. Loud noises also trigger a physiological response in our bodies. That's what Les Blomberg says.
When we were evolving, when things were noisy, it was usually a warning that something wrong was happening. If the lion walked through camp and you didn't hear it coming, you would be breakfast for that critter. And so we evolved to deal with that. Our hearing works 24 hours a day. It can wake us up if we hear noises in our environment.
As humans evolved, Blomberg says that loud noises would trigger a quick little shot of adrenaline, leading to fight or flight. He says we still have this response today when we hear a loud noise, even though we know it's just a siren or an air conditioner and not a lion. Those loud, isolated noises like a street sweeper or a leaf blower can be a pain. But if you're continuously exposed to loud noises like these over time, they can lead to some serious damage. Each year in this country, 30 million people suffer from hearing losses. Paul Kalaney is the director of audiology and electrophysiology at the University of Michigan's health system. He says hearing is the essence of human communication.
People who have significant hearing loss, they have a variety of emotional problems. They withdraw. They isolate themselves because they have trouble hearing. They don't socialize.
So loud noises aren't just an inconvenience. They can bring about real emotional problems. Les Blomberg with the Noise Pollution Clearinghouse says we don't have to live in a noisy world. Technology has the ability to make things quieter. Noise cancellation systems and acoustic buffering can make cars, appliances, and even lawn equipment quieter. Engineers can make road surfaces quieter to drive on. But these changes cost money, and they'll have to come from the various industries wanting to change. Blomberg says that's starting to happen, but slowly. He believes loud noises are also an ethical issue. He says it's like the golden rule of treating people the way you'd like to be treated, and that we can all do a politeness check by making sure we're not imposing our sounds on our neighbors. For the Environment Report, I'm Kyle Norris.
This is the Environment Report. Later, we'll hear from a veterinarian who practices holistic medicine, but his mainstream colleagues are still a little skeptical of the approach. But for right now, instead of healing animals, let's talk about one wildlife managers want to kill. In thousands of lakes and ponds across the country, there's a fish messing up the water, the common carp. Some biologists say we've never actually seen lakes the way nature intended because of the carp. The usual method to get rid of the common carp is to kill everything in the lake and start over. Some biologists think there's got to be a better way. Joel Grossstephen reports.
Common carp are like underwater pigs. They root up aquatic plants. They constantly stir up the mud in the bottom of lakes, making them murky. And in some lakes, common carp make up more than half the total weight of fish. Peter Sorensen is a fisheries professor at the University of Minnesota.
With their habit of rooting in the bottom continuously, night and day, all over the place, they will completely destroy the bottoms of lakes so they become turbid cesspools.
And it ruins the habitat for many birds and fish, too.
The fact is they are doing enormous damage at a level that I don't think people fully appreciate because they're living with us and we don't really know, in many cases, what these lakes and streams and rivers really should be like and could be like.
Common carp have been in U.S. lakes and ponds for more than a century. They came from Europe and Asia. At the request of new immigrants, the United States government stocked carp in lakes and rivers in the late 1800s. Sorensen says it didn't take long before there were problems.
By the early 1900s, it finally clicked. This was an enormous mistake, and people got busy trying to remove them.
Good records were not kept, and Sorensen says the overall impression is that removal efforts didn't work. Most efforts to control the fish are still unreliable. The fish is very tough, it spawns every year, and females produce nearly a million eggs. Fisheries managers try to control the carp the best they know how. Some hire commercial fishermen to net the carp. They also use poison, killing all the carp and all the other fish in the lake, and then start over. Fisheries managers currently use a chemical called rotenone, which they say is non-toxic to humans. Lee Sunmark is with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources.
If we see that a lake is way out of balance, it might have a lot of carp or it might have a lot of bullheads, and we've tried some biological means of turning that around, we get to a point where we use rotenone to treat it. And we basically clean a lake out, and then we might restock it.
The trouble is sometimes not all the carp die, and just a handful of them can reproduce and dominate that lake within a few years. Peter Sorensen and his team of researchers believe there's a better way. Sorensen says he does not object to rotenone poisoning out of hand, but he says it's expensive and heavy-handed. He and his team have been studying carp-infested lakes for the past 3 years to see if they can come up with some new way to control the fish. On this cold day, the biologists are surgically implanting radio tags in the carp. The scientists will be tracking these fish so they can find weak points in their life cycle. Shemek Beyer and his colleague Mario Travelin are about to operate on a fish they caught.
Well, she will be collecting data that we will then use to remove carp from the lake. she will be out a carp spy.
The researchers say if they can figure out the habits and the instincts of the common carp, they'll be able to control them in a way that's both effective and doesn't kill all the other fish in the lake. The study's lead investigator, Sorensen, says this is important work.
This is our first and still our most damaging invasive fish species. And if we don't do something with this, a species that, like I said, I think we can do something with, I really wonder what hope there is for any of them. This is, to me, this is the one you got to take out.
Sorensen says he hopes to create a model that can be replicated in different parts of the country. If he's successful, the ponds, lakes, and rivers that have been assaulted by carp for the last century might once again be able to host fish and other wildlife that were forced out. For the Environment Report, I'm Joel Grosteven.
This is the Environment Report. Veterinarians who use a holistic approach to healing make up only about 1% of all veterinarians in the country. But their numbers are growing, and so is their popularity among pet owners. Kenna Oman reports the mainstream veterinary community wants to see more science behind the methods used by holistic veterinarians.
The snow's starting to fall as I arrive at a small yellow farmhouse. I hurry my dogs up to the front door and step inside. This is a veterinary clinic of Dr. Conrad Kruse. He's a holistic veterinarian with a different approach to animal health care. One thing Dr. Kruse does is to take a lot of time teaching clients how to help heal their animals. He says it's hard work, but most clients embrace the idea.
9 out of 10 of them do a wonderful job. They do make food. They learn massage. They learn to stretch their animal. They'll buy air filters for the allergic individual. They see that healing is a progression.
Pet owners who switch to holistic veterinarians such as Kruse swear by this approach. And Neil and Joni Alcorn are perfect examples. They found Dr. Kruse after the local veterinarian said they'd run out of options to help their dog Poppy. Poppy developed complications after picking up a rare parasite, and the veterinarians tried everything from exploratory surgery to steroids. Neil Alcorn says after 10 months of this, they told him to prepare for his dog's death.
The vets were now basically saying you should get prepared for the fact that Poppy's not going to last much longer, and they didn't have anything else to offer.
But the Alcorns decided to keep trying. They researched holistic veterinarians and came across the name of Conrad Kruse. Right away, Dr. Kruse says he taught the Alcorns how to prepare fresh homemade food for their dog. They started with a simple puree of natural foods and offered it to Poppy. Within a few days, their dog was showing more interest in food for the first time in months. Dr. Kruse then added natural supplements to help build up Poppy's strength. Neil Alcorn says the good results continued.
It was so remarkable. Within, and I don't remember the dates, between 2 and 3 months, she had been weaned off of every single medication, including the steroids, and was beginning to function again as a living being.
Veterinarians such as Kruse say this kind of care shows how a natural and holistic approach should be part of standard veterinary treatment. But there's no policy within the mainstream veterinary community to link clients such as the Alcorns with holistic veterinarians. Dr. Craig Smith is with the American Veterinary Medical Association. He says most vets are cautious about fully supporting holistic veterinary medicine until they see more science.
Unfortunately, for too many of the complementary and alternative veterinary medical therapies, including some of the nutritional recommendations, we don't have the science. I'm not saying it doesn't work. It obviously does work for some animals. The question is, how can you as a practicing veterinarian develop your level of confidence to say this is going to work for your dog versus this may work for your dog?
So the larger community of veterinarians is reluctant to endorse holistic medicine as part of standard animal care. But this doesn't stop pet owners such as the Alcorns from continuing to use holistic methods for their animals. They're much more involved in their animals' health care now, from preparing meals to being part of decision-making at the local veterinary office. Neil Alcorn says they don't need to go further than Poppy for proof it works. She's still going strong 6 years after the local veterinarians gave up on her.
She was 16 years old this last September. This weekend I took her hiking for several 2 or 3 mile hikes, and she still plays with us. She's gray. She's showing her age, but then so are we all. And we have every hope of sending birthday congratulations to Dr. Cruzy next September on Poppy's 17th birthday. It even to us, it's a bit of an amazing story.
For the Environment Report, I'm Kina Oman.
And that's the Environment Report. I'm Lester Graham, trying to keep it quiet in my neighborhood. Well, except for those loud green drinks parties. No, I'm just kidding. Actually, a lot of people are starting local green drinks gatherings in their towns. Every month, people who work in the environmental field meet up for a beer or other libation at an informal session, and it's called Green Drinks. Sounds like fun. Maybe you can start one in your town. Mark Brush is my co-editor. He says people are just now beginning to realize that their old analog TVs won't be able to receive TV signals beginning next year. It's likely going to mean a lot of people throwing away their sets. Hope they do it right. Spread the word. Rebecca Williams is our chief reporter. Seems every time she goes out on an interview, she gets her car stuck in the snow. I'd wonder if she weren't holding her own little private green drinks gatherings if it weren't so early in the morning when she says she gets stuck. We've got links to more information on all the stories you heard today at www.environmentreport.org. And if you want to drop us a line, make some noise of your own, tell us about your pets and holistic medicine, or if you think killing every fish in a lake to eradicate carp sounds just a little crazy, or not, drop us a line. Our email address is feedback@environmentreport.org. The Environment Report is a tiny little division of Michigan Public Media.
Support for Environment Report stories comes from the Joyce Foundation, the George Gund Foundation, and the Great Lakes Fishery Trust. Send your comments or questions to feedback@environmentreport.org.